Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Pop Life Podcast today is December 3rd. Is it 3?
Yep.
December 3rd. Oh,
okay. December 3. According to Nye, it's summer 2022 already. It's 4th of July around the corner.
It don't work. See, it don't work in reverse. The year ends, but then in March, I'm going to say
that's when it kicks in. Okay.
Then when we get to July, I'm going to say the year is over again.
Then in July, it's like it's Christmas.
It's January to March is like 7 months.
Yeah, because there ain't nothing going on. And ain't nothing going on. The weather's like shit. So you're in the crib doing nothing, you know?
January itself is like 3 months long.
Yeah.
So, it don't work in reverse. That shit don't start rolling until March. March is when it starts rolling. As soon as we go through... As soon as the weather starts warming up, that's when you'll hear me say the year is over.
That's okay. Okay. Cool. All right. We're going to jump into it. We're all on tight schedules today. I saw Nye last night. We went to a premiere of a show called Harlem, which is obviously a show based in Harlem.
I was just tweeting about that. It's so good.
Yeah, we watched. They showed the first 3 episodes last night.
I watched the first one.
Okay.
Don't spoil it,
spoilers. But it's good. It's so easy to compare it to Sex and the City because it is 4 women, and that was for Sex and the City.
Run the World because it's 4 black women in Harlem.
I never saw Run the World, but from what I hear, this one is kind of different than that. But it's good. One woman is lesbian. One woman is kind of like a very kind of like rich kid, upperly mobile, bougie. Mm-hmm. One woman is kind of like the earthy one, I guess.
For lack of a better term. She's the hood. She's
hood
a round the way girl.
She actually reminds me of this girl I know from uptown. When I was watching, I was like, I wonder if they.
She's actually from uptown. Her cousin goes to convent. My cousin plays Angie. I was like, oh shit, you know, like that. So
she's from there. Yeah, and then and Megan Good is the 4th woman.
Megan Good is like the Joan or the Carrie.
Yeah, exactly, the Joan or the Carrie. Yeah. She's like the main character, but all the characters have, you know, a lot of play. Right.
The supporting cast, in my opinion. Megan's character, I'm curious to watch the development of Megan's character. I like how quirky and not altogether they've made her, which is also similar to like a Joan and a Carrie, like what she did. The supporting cast to me is more, they are so far more layered as characters. I'm very curious to see how they handle Megan. And this is not a diss, but you know, Megan's married and her marriage is really prominent, and even though her husband defends her from people who talk about how she dresses and stuff, she's still married to like a reverend, a pastor.
Yeah, pastor, yeah.
Whatever, who also works in film and media.
I'm not being shady. I'm asking a very legitimate question.
But he's
I think he's a minister who is known for his faith. Like he's an author. He's out there.
He's a minister. He is not a pastor. He does not have a flock.
Right. No, he does not have a specific church. No. That
I don't think
he's
got a church.
Of,
I don't think
whatever.
He got. A I don't think he got a
travel.
Body
actually went to like.
So ain't no deacons lined up for no first lady hug.
I don't know
if he's an MDiv. You know what I mean? I don't know. Master of Divinity for those.
He's usually the guest speaker at some church in LA on Sundays. You know,
and not to divert or not to like go off on a tangent, but I have to start asking that because so many of these guys
it's a valid question, and more of us should actually ask because we don't make the distinction enough. And for those who don't know, if you, to Sean's point, if you are a pastor, it means that you lead a congregation, right? If you are a reverend, it means that you have been, that you have had an ordination after completing seminary. But a minister, it can mean you finish seminary, it can mean you haven't, it just means that you preach.
Yeah.
So that,
speaking the word. Speaking the word.
It means you've been to Bible study.
Exactly.
At least three nights out the month.
If you are somebody's apostle or prophet or prophetess, that means your congregation made up some shit to decide to install you in leadership.
Wow.
Yeah, so. But anyway.
Sometimes means somebody made up some shit. But anyway.
Shout out to that, Devin Franklin. He's actually exactly, a good guy.
But whatever, Devin. You wasn't in the show. So anyway.
I was saying all this to say, I'm wondering how they're going to handle her love scene.
You
want to
know? Well, no, well, they had see Megan's titties.
They showed a little bit last night.
Out, but she backed out.
No, but they showed a little bit with her and her ex-boyfriend. Yeah, but it's like flashes. Those flashes.
Crazy.
Yeah, because it was because some titties. Because I seen some titties last night.
You saw her titties?
No. I seen the lesbian titties.
I know. I'm talking about
two sets of lesbian. I seen two sets of lesbian titties.
I don't think we're going to see her titties.
I don't know. We're gonna see Meg's titties, but I think we might.
See Meg's titties.
I think we might see the hood girl titties and
look. Pop Life podcast is bringing you the hard hitting information on titty count. Okay, no other podcast is giving you legitimate titty count on premieres. Okay,
yeah, I see fuck four titties. I seen four titties last night. And it was also. I mean, I don't want to spoil it, but it was a good show.
Anyway,
I recommend you watch it.
I would just say the representation of Black womanhood
is
it spans an incredible spectrum, and I'm all in. I'm excited about this show.
Good and it's grown, and this is a question I've had a lot of people ask me. So Tracy Oliver, who created and wrote Girls Trip, created this series.
She said she actually wrote this before Girls Trip. She shopped it, and everybody gave her a brick, but then Girls Trip blew up. Obviously,
Tracy Oliver is not from New York. Because a lot of people have been asking me because they've been saying that the trailers they've seen do not seem to them authentic to Harlem. And I think it's important to note, me and Jeff are Uptown people, A. B. We watched it in a room with Uptown people, including our very beloved Bev Smith, who is the most Harlem bitch ever.
Who is also a consultant and got a credit on the show. So maybe she's the reason that it's so Harlem.
But who is also in a couple of episodes mid-season.
Oh, really? That's exciting.
Yeah. And Tasha Smith, who y'all actually Tasha says, and I think her sister Sidra, who Tasha we all know from How Did I Get Married, etc., who are Uptown people, I think are in the mix now. But anyway,
I think they're from Jersey, actually, originally. Like, but whatever. But her sister does live in Harlem. Sister's been living in Harlem for ages.
Sidra, right?
Yeah. She's been living in Harlem for ages.
Sidra be around. You'd be like, that's Sidra. They're twins. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I say all that to say that, you know, Showtime may have cut their trailer, however, but what I really appreciated was that it very much feels set in Harlem today, meaning they're talking about your favorite restaurants closing down because of gentrification and how the landscape is changing. I do think that Megan Good's character feels like a transplant. They don't address origins yet.
And the light-skinned girl feels like maybe a transplant as well.
Her parents are supposed to be like, I think we were supposed to believe her parents are African or South
there
African.
There was an accent there. Her mother was played by Jasmine Guy.
And it which was I love.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, and it was an accent. Wow. Some either African or Caribbean type of accent.
But we haven't gotten into it yet, but there's definitely like some kind of diplomat ambassador situation, right? But her other two girls feel very fucking New York.
Yeah,
New York. Yeah. So we were all calling out names of restaurants as we saw them,
and streets and shit, and they go so and so.
Even though she's supposed to be at Columbia, she was on City College campus. That's fine.
Cool.
I'm not supposed to be at Columbia soon, and I was like, "You at City College though?" So you know, it's fine.
Well, because I doubt Columbia probably would let them film. You know, but again, it's cool. Like it's good. We highly suggest it.
But I fuck with it. I liked it a lot. I've seen Jeff a lot of you because you was at my house
two times in a week.
So Jeff, in
my physical form.
Jeff comes to my house last week and he rings the bell. I had people over my new apartment for what used to be our annual post Thanksgiving, basically taboo fight. That's basically the point of the whole get together, supposed to fight, clean,
to argue.
And I answer the buzzer, and he's like, "It's Jeffrey." I'm like, "Who's Jeffrey?"
That's my name.
It's Jeffrey who? He's like, "It's Jeffrey." I'm like, "You
hear?" Which is so funny because you're the only one who calls him Jeffrey. Like everyone else calls him Jeff. Like or on the podcast,
no, out of his name being Jeffrey. I was like, "Who is that?" And I literally was like, "You here for Naima?" He was like, "Is it?" Yeah, for Naima, for two ways. And I was like, "All right, buzz up." And like as soon as I said that, I was like, "Oh, it's Jeff." Okay.
That's my name. That's all my birth certificate. Okay, cool. So next thing, want to say rest in peace or whatever the kids are saying today to Virgil Abloh, who died a few days ago of cancer of the heart.
Which I didn't even know you could have.
Yeah, apparently a very extremely rare
form of cancer. Aggressive.
You know, as because it's the heart, like, what can you do? You can't cut it out. You know, you can't cut the cancer out. It kind of, you know, I guess they give him treatments to maintain. And before we get to kind of get it to him, what I found very, I guess, was shocking. Obviously, he kept it super low. Nobody knew publicly.
Well, apparently, he also thought he had turned a corner.
Yeah, and so publicly nobody knew. I don't know, and obviously in his wife and stuff, and in a circle, I don't know how many people knew. And because, and I'm talking shit here, but I'm assuming because of the type of cancer it was, we didn't see him physically change.
Right.
Like he didn't like start to get, you know, lose mad weight, and he like, couldn't well,
look. But apparently
his stature was always kind of slim, though, yeah?
Yeah, he's always a slim guy.
He thought he was in remission. Somebody I know who knows him. Wow. Actually, a couple of people said that he was planning for future. He thought he had, like, somebody was like, "I just saw him a month ago." He was saying he had beat it. So he apparently thought he was in.
And then it came back quickly.
And then it came back quickly. And again, I mean, this is from, like, obviously very third hand information. But, who knows in real life? But a lot of people were like, "Yo, we're making plans for next year." You know,
they showed his collection, which now is last collection, yesterday. Like, he had a full collection. They did it at Art Basel. It's actually very emotional because it would have been, you know, a normal Louis Vuitton show, which is a big deal, you know, because Louis Vuitton and a lot of people. But because of what happened, I think the crowd was probably triple the size that they initially planned for. It was a massive crowd. So many people of his friends and family came, and influencers and so on and so on. And of course, it was very emotional because at the end, you know, at the beginning and at the end, they're playing clips of him, the audio of him talking, and they do this huge display in the sky, and it says Virgil was here, and these fireworks and everything, and he built this massive statue of him in front. But you know, I mean, so it's a loss for the fashion world, for the influencer, and it's
the very art world.
The art world, yeah, and it's very interesting because I did not know this about him, but just like with like DMX and some other people, like you find out that he like was actually crazy accessible, like, and he would talk to people all the time. Like if he met you, like kids are saying, "Yeah, I met Virgil outside of the store one time, and we exchanged numbers, and I texted him, and he would text me back, and we would talk." And like, lots of stories like this. Lots of stories are like, "Yeah, I met Virgil one time, and like I was talking to him, and like he would hit me back, and like we would kind of kick in. He'd be asking me what I think about, you know, what he should do this season, and blah blah blah." So he was like apparently like a extremely, extremely nice guy, really humble, not on no bullshit, and just really about his thing.
I can't remember if I told this story just to y'all privately or on the show, but back in February, I was on a panel, me and Bevy, for LVMH Corporate, internal.
Okay. Yeah, I remember you was on the panel, yeah.
Yeah, during Black History Month, to talk about Black culture's influence on fashion, art, etc. So it was me, Bev, and Virgil. So, you know, I'm going into it like, all right, this nigga. You know, like, because from the outside, I didn't see a connection to Virgil with Blackness, right? I just didn't feel it. And aside from him being a Black person.
Mm-hmm.
And I do give myself and Bebby credit for loosening him up because Masora it works in HR and has DEI stuff, but she was basically like, "It's internal, y'all can be raw," right?
Mm-hmm.
And he started loosening up during the course of this conversation. So this is a conversation where I learned he was Ghanaian, had no idea.
I knew that. Mm-hmm.
But also, like, he got more passionate as he got more comfortable. And I was like, okay, the heart is there. Like, the heart is there. The passion is there. The sincerity is there. And I left with, you know, I left that conversation with a distinctly different impression of Virgil than I had coming in. So I can understand the love people who knew him had for him. Because again, it didn't feel like no bullshit. It felt like a very sincere want to, you know, bring people in to do something different, to, you know, really, really make change. But I will say, somebody said this on Twitter, and I second that thought. They were like, respectfully, keep it to Virgil's is still in the lexicon. And I'm like, 100%.
Oh, yeah. Well, the jokes is going to fly. You know what I'm saying? The jokes are going to fly. Yeah.
Nothing, not even death, stops the jokes flying. Yeah, I will say, I think my impression of him was the same as yours, Nye, but for me, it was the proximity to Kanye.
I can see that too.
That kind of made it like, okay, this nigga is ridiculous.
That definitely didn't help my impression. Right.
And then the more that I learned about him and just like what he was trying to do with fashion and like looked into the actual like pieces he was producing, I was like, oh, this nigga might be legit. So
yeah.
Huge loss. That's insane to me. But so
regardless of what I personally felt about his actual designs outside of sneakers, because sneakerheads were definitely like going up for Off-White, outside of sneakers and his Nike collaborations, outside of sneakers, regardless of what I felt about his designs for Louis, what we can't deny is that Virgil simply being in position had a huge impact on Black people who want to go into fashion.
Absolutely.
Aspiring designers and
just the access, I think.
Yeah. And he put a lot in. You find that now, like how many people he was putting on. Like his whole thing was, and he really felt like this. If I did it, you can do it too. Like you can do it too. And he would like, you're finding out that he would like, again, talking to all these people, he's sending people shit. And he's like, yo, meet me here and meet me there. And like, you know, these are kids. Because Virgil was, when he got to Louis Vuitton, I think he was only about 37. He was young. You know, he's not like an old guy. He was like, not a kid, but he was still very connected to youth culture.
He passed at 41. How old is he?
41.
Yeah.
He had just turned 41, I think, in September. Another thing that blows my mind is just how much work he did, like to do two Louis collections a year, Off-White, the Nike stuff, IKEA, all these things that he was doing. Like he did so much work in such a short period of time. Like he was obviously constantly working, but like he just kept churning. And some collections hit a little harder than others, or whatever. But like the fact that he was able to do that much work, isn't quick, because like most designers are doing two collections a year, most they're not doing a Nike collab too, you know what I'm saying, and an IKEA collab too, and doing a G-Wagon collab with Mercedes.
I didn't even know about the IKEA shit till yesterday. Like,
yeah
that was a couple years ago though, right? Or is it consistent?
I think IKEA collection was probably came out in like 20. I don't think it was last year. It was very
wow.
Yeah, it was fast. Well, anyway, so you know, peace and blessings to him and anybody who's to show no.
I got it. I got a quick shout out. Just speaking of art, Basil, my brother got to show one of his pieces at a show at Art Basil this week. So
dope.
Super proud of him. He's like a traveling.
We didn't know your brother was an artist. Tell us more.
Well, he is a traveling electrician, so he goes around the country and sets up like antique shows. He does Art Basel every year. Like he's always there and always setting up the tents and doing the whole thing. Well, this, like he knows those guys, and a guy found out that he paints sometimes because it's like a thing that he kind of does. Mm-hmm. And they loved his work. So he got to just have a piece in one of those shows, which is wild. So big shouts to my brother, Michael McFarlane. Love you.
Mike, you lit.
He's never going to hear this because he's not a techie. Like,
well, it don't matter. You put it in the universe, and that's what's important. No, peace to Mike, and peace to everybody that are Basil's going on right now. I wanted to mention the Soul Train Awards, which were on this weekend. And Sunday night, that always comes on the Sunday after Thanksgiving. So all Black folks is home. Ate the last of the leftovers. Hopefully y'all not getting food poisoning out there. And, and you know, getting ready for work the next day after a long weekend. This year they taped it at the Apollo, not in Vegas.
Shout out to Tisha and Tashina.
They're always great.
Incredible
they're always,
hosts.
And yeah, so they're, always, they're always fun. They're always fun. And, they, and I like that. You can tell they like they'll say jokes, especially Tashina to Tisha. Tashina will say jokes to Tisha that are not on script. You can tell. Like you can tell sometimes because Tisha be like, yo, like she said this shit about Martin.
That was like, on missed you on the last.
Not on script.
That was on script. That reaction. That reaction was script. You could tell in the house the reaction was scripted.
Okay.
Like well, played so well on TV. Tisha, I was cracking up.
Tisha and Tashina have played the we play in the dozens with each other roles so much that I think that she just knows how to react. Like Tashina just got her.
Got it. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that seems to be their role. Their role, especially this show, was Tisha's dope and Tashina's kind of like fumbling. I mean, Tashina's dope and Tisha's
and
like
Tisha's kind of fumbling. Yeah,
errors and whatever. But they both got production credits this year.
Good.
I thought was great. I was in the house at the Apollo Theater after a very intense logistical set of hoops to jump through to get there to make sure everybody was COVID safe. What was interesting, and which I think you could feel at home, was that the crowd was honestly probably more than 50%. Well, I don't know what other invited guests were there, but there were more seat fillers. So if you've never been to a taping, in order to make sure that the camera never pans across a semi-empty room, there are people who are casted by the production company so that when ticketed folks get up and leave their seats, somebody is put in that seat. And
they made a movie about it.
Yeah, they're literally seat fillers.
Yeah.
I've never been to a live show. With this many seat fillers. And it was a seat filler who yelled out, "Let them use you," when Jasmine Sullivan was on the set. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, wow.
That when they cut it, but when Normani was walking up to give her award, the whole crowd was like, "I'm ready to get into you. I'm ready to." Dude, like the whole crowd was like singing it. They showed a little bit of it, but like they were really like rocking for a minute after the music cut. The whole crowd was still singing. And I was like, so it brought a much more fan driven.
Yeah, yeah.
But we couldn't hear everybody's actual vocals from the house, which is.
Is that why the audience was like not into it? Because I feel like the performances were great.
Some of it, like for example, Leon Bridges, we couldn't hear Leon at all. We just heard him.
Wow.
Which I thought was a shame. I was hoping he would take it again because, like, Ari took it twice because the first time we couldn't hear Ari. Mm. And she did it again. And it
so, which one made it to TV?
The second take, actually. And she
is
sounded.
That why she. Oh,
she sounded much better, and she didn't move a lot. The front take, I think her shoes were new, maybe the floor was slippery. I don't know, but the second take, she sounded. I thought she sounded amazing. People were like she was stiff.
She sounded great. Yeah,
Everybody sounded good. I mean, vocally, I didn't have any issues.
The first time, and we couldn't hear Leon the first time, and I think that Leon, as the performance went on, the audience not connecting to him because he was performing what is for many a new song.
Yeah.
Dope song. It's Form Details. The album is dope, by the way. The album is fucking fire. It's like a neo soul album. It's not that classic. The album's fire. But yeah, I think he felt it as the performance went on. So I was hoping he would take it again, and he didn't. But yeah, it was. We couldn't really hear everybody, and the band was drowning some people out. But overall, it was still like a good show. It's always
a good show. Maxwell was. He's always great live, anyway. So that's not surprising. Happy for him getting his flowers. Happy for Jasmine Sullivan getting her flowers.
I really loved her speech.
I was about to say, talking about
the honesty of that.
That was really nice. That she's like, I don't come outside because I'm not comfortable sometimes with, you know, my weight or whatever. But it was good. I mean, it was, you know, a good Sunday night wrap up for the weekend. I do want to talk about there's a couple of things I want to talk about. I just want to mention this Von Dutch documentary that I watched. It's on Hulu.
Did you watch all of the episodes?
Like, yeah, it's only three.
Oh, okay.
It's only three. Yeah, watch all three. It's called The Curse of Von Dutch. I had no idea about the story about the clothing line by Dutch, which was very popular, I guess, 10 years ago now? Maybe a little more than 15?
Like, no, 15. It was like 03 to 05.
Yeah, yeah. And how it kind of blew up, and these people were kind of all jockeying for position and ownership of the country, and this guy from Denmark kind of swooped in because he had money and kind of swooped in and basically kind of stole the company from the guys that invented the designs and stuff. And it was all this kind of other, it was like this really, it's really a dark LA underworld type of shit going on, but like for real, like it really was happening. Like it was murders, it was like all kind of shit. It was
casually like confessed to murder like in the first few minutes of the doc. Yeah. And I was like, wait, I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah.
I tried to watch it. I watched like a good bit of the first episode, but it just was so hard to follow. I was like, what are we even talking about?
Yeah. When you get time, you should watch the second and the third piece. But this is very interesting because I just didn't know all of that. I didn't know. I just thought Von Dutch fell off because that's what brands like that do. They fall off over time. They get really hot and then they kind of go away. Juicy Couture, they get really hot and they go away. But I didn't know all the other darks, deep shit that happened.
I thought it was just because the clothes got uglier.
And that was part of it. They talk about that too, how they oversaturated and were just making everything. And it mentioned something very interesting, which I hadn't thought about. He said the guy who was running the finance side, he said at our peak we were making $400 million a year, which is a lot of money. But he said at our peak the bootleggers were making $1 billion a year. Because Von Dutch was very easy to boot. Like, you get a hat and just sew it.
It's a t-shirt with a logo.
Yeah.
Well, look at how they started. They started by taking Dickies logos off and just putting Von Dutch patch over it.
Yeah, so they basically were bootleg. They were bootlegging at the beginning. You know, and then it came back on them. And so he talked about how easy it was to bootleg Von Dutch. And that's one of the things that killed it is it got so oversaturated because all the street vendors were just bootlegging it. They were like, "Yo, this is nothing." T-shirt, iron, like you said, not like iron on a thing or sew on I forget the shit's called me iron on a shirt, but whatever. And they were killing it, and you couldn't really tell the difference because Von Dutch wasn't like some high end quality. So you couldn't really tell the difference.
It wasn't unique designs. It was t-shirts and like board shorts.
That's what I'm saying. The hats came much later. The clothes were popping, and then they had these hats laying around the office.
I had so many Von Dutch hats and belts, and I don't think I ever.
Really?
I don't think something happened because I was working for friend of the show, Jessica, friend of the show, and that we all know her. She's never on the show, but Jessica Rosenblum. And something, we did an event or something where we got a bunch of stuff. I ain't paid for them shits. I know that. I think I might have paid for like a Von Dutch, like a hoodie or something.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that doesn't seem like your style, like that kind of hat. If I picture in a hat, it's not that.
I do like regular ass baseball caps. I don't do them wide. I don't like trucker hats. I don't like wide brims, but I had a belt and I had a couple t-shirts. Like I would do it a couple times. It wasn't really my thing, but my hat was fly though. My shit was like purple and green. Like it was a regular normal ass
like joint. The red, white, and blue drink.
They're coming back and it's concerning.
I saw
the guy said that there was some hats in the office one day. They were just laying there. And he was like, "Yo, what are those? There's some hats on them." He's like, "Yo, what do we put a sticker on the front?" It literally just happened like that. And he said he just sent them out to some people and to the stores. And then on that, it was like a Friday. And he said they came back Monday. And he was like, "Yo, they sold out every hat in the city." And he was like,
"You know what? That's how Von Dutch makes me think of is that episode of Being Bobby Brown where he took the kids shopping and Bobby Christina bought like literally like an arm length of Von Dutch hat. Like she just picked them up and put him on the register. And the sister, Bobby Brown's, I think oldest daughter, was like, "Yo, what are you doing? Like, this shit's not even fly." She was like, "I can have what I want."
Well, yeah. They did. Whitney's in the doc. It was a clip of Whitney in the doc because Whitney and her Bobby Christina, when she was very small and him, went to the Von Dutch showroom and they gave them 30 bags of clothes.
Oh, my God.
And the guy who runs Von Dutch, he was like, somebody came in, he was like, Whitney's taking 30 bags of clothes. And he was like, are you kidding? Give her 50 bags. Don't give a fuck. Like, let her have whatever she's want. That's Whitney fucking Houston. Because they knew once she put the hat on, it was over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Paris Hilton's in the dock. They got Paris to sit, you know, which was interesting.
I remember Paris being a big Bond.
Paris said huge. That when they went to shoot her and Nicole Richie went to shoot that show.
She the said Simple the, Life.
The Simple Life. She said the day before the show, to start taping the way they were supposed to fly to Oklahoma or whatever, they went to the Von Dutch store. They gave them mad shit, and that's why they wore that on the show, because that's all the clothes they had. So that's all they had. Wow. That's why they wore it on the show every day. They literally had nothing else to it, because there was nowhere to shop where they were. So
right.
They just would buy, we were, oh, wear another Von Dutch hat, another Von Dutch. So it's very interesting, but again, it gets dark, but I suggest it if you got some time to watch it. I want to talk about True Story. Kevin Hart's movie. Well, series. Movie, series. Right. I don't know what you
could quite could say. Have been a movie.
Oh, wait. Top. Before we jump in this, because it's going to be a quick mention. No. What I'm saying is, before we start talking about Kevin, I just wanted to do a quick mention, because I know we're not going to go deep. I just wanted to mention the Beatles documentary on Disney Plus. It's 8 hours. It's really long. Each episode is like damn near 3 hours. But if you're a Beatles fan, which I don't know if any of you are. I know Brian.
Casual.
If you're a Beatles fan, it's really interesting, because it's this footage of them building up to do this. The last show they ever did was when they did the show on the roof of the building. And it's just like their creative process, like how they're writing songs and how they interacting with each other. And the little beefs isn't the right term, but you can kind of see the splitting up of these guys that grew up together. It's just very interesting. It's really long, but it's really interesting. I just wanted to mention that. But now, Kevin.
I forget, you've been in the house. Like, you can watch 8 hours of a
Beatles. No, I haven't finished the Beatles shit, though. I haven't finished the second episode. Kind of going back to it. Because it's long. It's really long. But it's really interesting. And I'm a Beatles fan as well. But anyway, True Story. So Kevin Hart has this show on Netflix. And mm-hmm. he's playing... I feel
himself.
Like he's playing... Yeah, character close to him, his actual self, and not the manic character that we see him play on all these other movies. It's a story about a comedian called The Kid, who is from Philadelphia, has an older brother like Kevin, and the thing
is wildly famous, like selling out not arenas but like stadiums.
Like Kevin, you know what I'm saying?
Very hard to not separate The Kid. It's like Prince and Purple Rain.
Yeah.
It's very hard to not separate. And Prince is the kid in Purple Rain too. Shit.
Yeah,
it's very hard to not separate Kid from Kevin. Which I think it has made this a skewed and or hard watch for some people, because you can only think of him as Kevin. He's from, like you say, he's from Philly. He's got his nonstop craze, selling out everything. He's got the team, blah, 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 blah. He's in, you know, going through marriage shit, whatever.
Yeah, there's so much stuff of his life that's interwoven. Like the marriage thing, like you said, remember in the documentary, he had a fight with his trainer, the guy. Same like in the movie. Like his brother, you know, his older brother, Robert, is actually like, I don't want to call him a fuck up. That's harsh. But his brother kind of has gotten into trouble over the years. And mm-hmm. there has been a strange relationship with Kevin and his brother, which is why you don't really see his brother. A lot of people don't even know he has an older brother. Because his brother's still in Philly. Yeah, his brother's still in Philly. Like, he never left Philly. Like, so there's a lot of stuff interwoven. And remember, his boy tried to extort him.
Yeah, well, that's so. Here's
now, it's a different type of story. What I'm saying, but it's still.
I was watching it. I was like, oh, this is a spin on the extortion scheme for the sex tape.
Yeah.
By the time I got to the end, I'm talking complete shit. But by the time I got to the end, the non-nuanced side of me, who likes to be messy, was like, this nigga is confessing to killing somebody in that car accident.
I mean, I don't know.
The last episode, and I was like, this ain't about the sex tape. This is about the car accident. That's what the fuck this shit is.
Yeah, as I'm saying, there's a lot of his shit like interwoven into this story. You know, names have been changed to protect the innocent or whatever, but it's very based on a lot of things that have happened to him over the past, I guess,
it's
5 years.
Let me say this. I enjoyed it too.
I enjoyed it a lot.
I watched it as a thriller.
It is a thriller.
But what I'm saying is, because, like I said before, because it's so Kevin, it's hard not to want to watch it and think it's supposed to be like an Entourage. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's hard not to think it's supposed to be a semi-fictional but mostly autobiographical account, right? It's hard. So, you know, when shit starts happening, you're like, Kevin Hart would never do this shit. And then you have to be like, it's not Kevin Hart. Like, that's what I'm saying. So it is a thriller. You have to take, you almost have to take the Kevin Hart. You do have to take the Kevin Hart out of it. You have to.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with you there. Again, and I don't know Kevin. I've never met him before. I don't know anything about him. But Kevin Hart is from North Philly. I'm not saying he's a killer. What I'm saying is some of the dark shit that happens in this film, not the murder part, but some of the dark energy that he has.
Murder was like, whoa.
It's crazy. But
the murder is the main, the murder is what I'm talking about.
I'm saying the dark energy of the character. I think
the dark energy of the character wasn't a thing. It's the fact that there's a certain point at which the plot becomes completely unbelievable for anybody who's
I don't know. Kevin Soltine from North Philly, he might have had to do some shit at some point.
He ain't killed nobody.
I ain't say he killed nobody, but ain't to say that one of the other niggas might have had to handle something. I don't know.
Saying like there comes a point where I believe you have to divorce the fact that this is a celebrity who exists in real life.
Okay.
Please divorce Wesley Snipes from this character. He was trending because people hated him.
I hated Carlos. And now he
tells
much.
Me he did a great job.
Oh, he did a great job.
He's acting his ass off.
Killed it.
Absolutely.
I hated Carlos.
I love you, Wesley Snipes, but like, good Lord.
But it's like, but what I was going to say was, I enjoyed it overall, but they definitely got to a point where I was like, I almost felt like Kevin was using this as a platform, which is why I also had to forget I was watching Kevin, because there were a couple of monologues about how he's just human and he makes mistakes. And I was like, not this nigga trying to use this to get at critics, you know, for holding him accountable for shit. When we're talking about a totally different situation. I fuck up sometimes. I'm human. I'm just, man, nigga, shut your ass up. That was the part where it was like, you could tell some of this was actually, like, if I could get at some of y'all and do the and kill y'all,
yeah, I would.
If I could actually fucking take a piano wire to some of your necks, like, I would. That's what it also felt like.
Yeah. It was good. It's very it's a thriller. It's very intense. We were talking on the text.
Great twist in the last episode.
Which we obviously won't spoil. But
I mean, I'm not gonna watch it.
That's fine. I mean, other people might not have known. So, but also,
it's worth watching, Inca.
It's good, Inca. I'm telling you, You should watch it. I'm telling you.
My free time is very, very sparse at this moment. So maybe once Trev gets back.
Yeah, but it should be on your list. Yeah. It should be on your list.
I will say this: the very first scene in the very first episode or second scene. There's a scene on airplane with this entitled ass white man in the first episode.
I feel like that probably actually happened.
Yes. It's one of the best scenes because this part I will say the part take away all the murder shit that's going on. Just the depiction of being on the road with a black superstar while they're trying to balance life shit and the work they have to do and the entitlement of the fans, all of that is so real. Mm-hmm. It's really real. Like, that part is really real. Yeah. So I was like, they nailed this shit. And Kevin's not trying to be funny in none of this shit, which I'm now like, I don't ever want you to be funny again in life, my nigga, because...
Yeah.
More interesting.
I did enjoy his acting. Yeah.
Even when he does a couple of stand-up parts in it, they're quick. Like, they cut them quick. Yeah. They don't drag. So it's like him doing his act is not really the focus of the movie.
Exactly.
You know who I really enjoy in this, and I cannot remember his name, but the guy from Love Is, Remember?
Oh, yeah.
The security guard guy.
Yeah.
I liked his toughness. Like, it made him fine to me. He wasn't
but,
fine.
But if you watch real, if you watch was, Kevin's documentary, he, that's how his that guy in Kevin's real life is. Mm. He's kind of like, you know, Kevin's trainer. That's how he is. He's a trainer slash kind of security dude. It's like the same person.
Okay.
That's the one Kevin had to fight with on the plane.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But
I didn't make it that far, but okay.
Yeah. No. You fight with him on a plane in the documentary.
Oh, that was on a plane?
Yeah, it was on a plane. They were on a private plane.
Kevin Hart's an asshole.
Yeah. But anyway, I recommend, like you said, it's a thriller. And you know, when you put it on your list, you know, I know you're busy putting it on. I also want to mention Bruised, which is Halle Berry's movie.
That's on my list.
On Netflix as well. She just got a big deal from Netflix for like a big production deal. To direct and produce more movies.
Let me just say, I did not watch anything you're probably going to talk about. I've been a terrible podcast friend, but Ivy has been kicking my ass.
So you're bruised.
I am bruised. I am one less sister lock. I have a scratch on my back from her fingernails because she was sleeping super wild. The kid is, I haven't said it publicly, but like Trav is away for training and we're in the home stretch. So I've been a single parent for like a couple of months. And women were not designed to do this shit alone.
No.
And I'm slowly dying. But Ivy's doing well and I don't get a lot of TV time that isn't the Bubble Guppy season 3, episode 8. So
it is okay. And we're with you. We know you're doing we're taking care of Ivy's way more important than watching fucking Kevin Hart.
Not for my mental health, but what you saying?
Aside from Bruce, I also want to shout out because I've been doing something and I have more to do though, but I happen to, because I've been in here in the house doing shit until my loving parental units were here for the past whole
other real ass crazy.
Mama, I love you. So glad you're gone, but I love you. I watched Cowboy Bebop.
You know, that's on my list. How was it?
Yeah. So here's where I was, but this happens to me sometimes when I'm binging. So I only vaguely know Cowboy Bebop, the anime series. I know a little, I've seen clips, you know, because it's one of the animes that like seep into bigger mainstream consciousness, whatever. I didn't know a lot about it, but I don't mind like the spaghetti western slash noir shit.
Mm-hmm.
I had it on mostly as background, right? And it was interesting enough and it was high energy enough for me to kind of like passingly pay attention to what was going on. I've been doing the same thing with, have you been watching Arcane? Do you watch Arcane?
I watched the first 2 episodes. Yeah. I'm getting into it.
I was doing the same thing with that. So, but what happens when I do this is it usually takes me till about ep 5 and all of a sudden I'm in the plot for real.
Mm.
And then I sit down and watch it. Then I go back and watch the beginning now that I have a better context. Mm. That's what happened with me and Cowboy Bebop. I was like, I mean, it's all right. It kind of reminds me of Guardians of the Galaxy-ish, you know, because they're bouncing to these different planet systems to catch people and do whatever. Mm. It actually reminded me a lot of that. But I got to the end. By the end, I was really drawn in and I went back to the top to rewatch. I liked it. I know somebody
else. It's dope.
And they couldn't quite get into the series. And I was like, maybe try it again and give it some time. So I liked it. I fuck with it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's on my list of things to watch.
Speaking of the Guardians, Hawkeye, did you catch it?
I watched 1 and 2. I haven't watched 3 yet. I didn't love it, but I'm going to go back because I don't know much about the Ronin character. So when I was watching Hawk, I was watching it expecting to see Jeremy Renner, who I think is dope. Jeremy Renner. And I'm like, what is this girl? What the fuck is this? I don't want to watch her. So I was
the girl is dope. Yes, it's,
what's her name?
I do like
her in real name?
I have no idea.
No. She's big. She's a big star. Haley something. She's like a big.
Steinfeld?
Yes. Yeah. She's like a big young white actress. Yeah. But But yeah, I'm going to go back. One and two was cool. But again, I need to go watch it again just because I walked into them expecting one thing and I got something so different than what I was expecting. I was thrown off.
Yeah. I think they're going to go way around the bend to make us like Hawkeye, because the grand consensus in people that are into the MCU is that nobody gives a fuck about Hawkeye. No, so I think they're trying to kind of win us over and add this extra girl and do all this noble kind of shit to make him likable.
Yeah, okay.
So it's not Jeremy Renner's fault.
Because he's dope. That's why. Anyway.
I still got to send you that clip.
Yeah, send me that clip, please. I wanted to mention also, it was something else good I wanted to mention before we go into some deeper shit. Did you watch Love and Marriage Huntsville? You know, they had the finale Saturday past.
No, I'm behind. I told you I didn't watch anything.
No. I'm not shaking my head because you don't watch it. I'm shaking my head because, like, it's bonkers. And it's the reunion starts this weekend, Saturday. It's three-part reunion.
I don't think I have more space in my heart to, like, hate these people. Like, how much worse could it get? It is already, like, I want to stone Martell and, like, burn the other men at the stake on this show and slap all the women for being stupid. Like, I cannot.
Well, it ain't gonna get much better because I'll leave it at that. It ain't gonna get much better. So I wanted to bring up something I found very interesting. So Deion Sanders, Hall of Fame football player, Primetime is his nickname. He is the coach at Jackson State University.
Second season,
right? I think he's been there 3 years. Second season, the team's actually doing pretty well. They, of course, because of him, they're starting to. I think they're on television this weekend on ESPN or something. Like some
didn't prime. He like upgrade their conference or something?
Upgrade the conference. Like they're playing well. Of course, he is who he is, so they get a lot of attention to he and stuff. And he has a lot of guys come down and talk to the team, and you know he's done a lot for the conference, and I really respect it because he didn't even go to an HBCU. So for him to go back to go to an HBCU and put this much energy into it, I respect it and I appreciate it because he didn't have to. Jackson State has a long history of football. Walter Payton, some other pros came from there. But it's still good. So anyway, my point is, so either yesterday or the day before, he had this woman, Brittany Renner, come talk to the team. So Brittany Renner is, for lack of a better terms, an IG model, like an admitted
why is Brittany, is she a basketball, she's a basketball groupie, right?
She's a basketball groupie. I'm about to explain it to you. That's what I want to get into. Number one, so she's a basketball groupie. She had a baby recently by an NBA player who she's much older than. Brittany's not old, but I think she's probably 27-ish, 26, 27, 28. The kid she had the baby with was literally right out of high school. He was like 18 or 19. And he was all in love. I'm sure she did kind of all the tricks and got the nigga open and had his baby and then has been on the gram basically saying how to catch a nigga. She did a thing on the gram before even getting with old boy. Like, this is what I'm going to do. And then she did it. She got pregnant by the NBA player. She's getting massive amounts of money from him for child support and so on and so on. So she's been like kind of like this controversial figure for trapping a young boy and taking his money. And she's like, fuck that. Like, if I was a man, you wouldn't be saying that and all that type of shit. Now, this is the thing. Brittany Renner, for most people don't realize, she went to Jackson State. She went to school there.
I did not know that.
Yeah, she went to Jackson State. That's her connection to the school. So, as a matter of fact, in October, she posted a picture of herself in homecoming. She's like, I'm back. Like,
lock up your sons.
She said that. Yeah, that's how she said that. She did that, so, yeah.
It's slightly less crazy.
So Coach Prime, Deion Sanders, had Brittany Renner come speak to the football team about groupies and about what to look for, what not to look for, and don't get caught out there with women and da 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 da. And this has created a controversy in and of itself because everybody's like, why the fuck would he bring? They said this
funny
is
that Deion Sanders would do it, A.
I mean, but who else would understand that? Who else would understand that? world, but a nigga who was a Hall of Fame player.
I totally get, like,
the Smack Entertainment team who manages Dion and co-manages Dion and Michael Strayhorn and all them other stuff. Constance Schwartz, I used to work at Astroworld. They've been killing it. But anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead, Nick.
Who better than Brittany Renner to give a class on how to avoid a hoe who's after your money? I mean, it's controversial, but like,
I'm not mad.
There's people in there that are going to talk about the real shit.
Because the thing about Brittany, is like, she's not 45. She's still in the game.
It's akin to Peter Guns being the host of Cheaters. Is that? Yeah,
like, Brittany's in the game. She's still in the club. She just got a nigga last year. Like, she's in the game. So like, who else? And she's alum. And she's alum. So like, who better? People so mad.
It's completely absurd, but it's spot on. Like, I'm low key not mad at it. I hate that it has to be done, but I'm not mad at it. Dion seems to know what he's doing.
He does. He knows what he's doing.
And this might be a, you know, hey, don't get caught up kind of thing. And they're not going to hear it from Deion Sanders.
Because he's their father.
Ironically. Yeah.
He's their father at this point.
You bring in a woman that they would actually that they follow
on. They literally follow on the gram. They follow on this girl on the gram. They know what it is. So I don't know. I thought it was, like you said, I wasn't mad at it at all. A lot of people were pissed off.
Now, she is a polarizing character. You either love that kind of life she's living or you want to stone her.
Yes.
There's no in between. Yeah.
Even when she walked in, there's a clip when she walks in and the guy's like, oh, yeah. And she's like, yeah, whatever, nigga. It's like, yeah, I'm here, I'm back. Like, you know, I don't know. I found it. I found this.
Is she not wearing pants in the clip? Am I tripping?
She's wearing a dress.
Okay.
But the dress is mighty.
It's
short.
Barely there. Yeah.
It's barely there.
No slut shaming for me. You know, I'm all about, you know,
holes need love too.
The labia, as far as I'm concerned.
Holes need love too.
That was an intense outfit to give that kind of class to that kind of student body. I don't know. Anyway.
I wanted to mention
fun times at Jackson State.
Jackson State. Their Roman will be up next year. I bet that shit.
I bet.
You know? I wanted to mention the Real World. They're doing like these I forget what it's called exactly, but they're basically taking the people. They did season one, the cast members, they did season one, and now they're doing season two, and they bring them back to the house that they lived in, and they're obviously all like adults now, everybody's like 50 or 48 or whatever, and they talk about their experiences in the house and how they've grown, how they changed, blah, 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 blah. So it's like a few episodes. It's not multiple seasons. So they did season one with Heather B. and
I feel like season one was four episodes. I did watch all of that. It was great.
Yeah, it's like four. Yeah, it might be four. It's very short. And that's now they're doing season two with Tammy and David.
That gave us Tammy and Country John.
And Country John.
The Latin girl nobody remembers.
Irene and Beth A and Beth B and blah, blah, blah. So I watched the first episode. It was very interesting because, again, these people haven't seen each other for the most part in 27 years. They didn't really, this cast did not really keep in touch. They like all.
But the controversy, like the shit that happened in the house was
crazy.
You know, I wouldn't speak to them niggas either, honestly.
Yeah. And then David's there and he talks about how it ruined his life. And,
sure did.
And Tammy's there and she talks about, you know, the effects that it had on her. It's very interesting because, again, like you said, it's only four episodes. So it's not like they're trying to stretch it out or become like hot people. They got four episodes to kind of do what they're going to do, talk about what they're going to talk about, and then they, you know, then it's over and they all go back to their lives, whatever they're doing. It's a watch if you ain't doing shit else. You know, bored on a Sunday.
Yeah, I watched a couple minutes of the first episode. I will say for Tammy, this was the show that introduced us to Tammy Roman on like a grand scale. And I got to give her some props. Like, she was the first like televised abortion that I had ever seen. And the first person
somebody kicked out of a reality show house. Like the way I was Tammy when I got on Basketball Wives, like every second that I got a chance, I would have been like, bitch, y'all are all here because of me. Like, I started this whole
thing. Yeah. She's the first person to like really call out sexual assault that didn't look like sexual assault we had seen before. Right. Yeah. That was a sexual assault. Right. And for her, for them to all stick to it and be like, that made me uncomfortable. Like watching it when I'm a teenager was like, oh, you're making too much of it. But like looking back with 2021 eyes, that was brave as hell. Like that was.
Tammy didn't care about being messy on TV. Like she had her jaw wire shut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like she was being messy on TV. And I was like, that was new because Heather B was not being messy on TV. You know what I'm saying?
Like, not at all. Not. Heather B was very conscious of the cameras.
Yeah, the first season, nobody knew what this was really going to be. That second season cast, because wasn't that also the cast with, or was that season three? Wasn't that also the cast with, what was his name? The gay member?
Oh, Pedro?
That was season three.
No, that was three. That was three, San Francisco, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, but you know, we get, okay, because this is LA. So this was the first messy cast. Like I said.
Yeah.
David gets kicked out of the house. That's the first, you know. Tammy was always in some shit.
Always.
Popping off. Doing, and I want to say maybe she started dating Kenny.
She does. They cut, I don't know if she was on the show, but she dated Kenny Anderson right after the show and they got married.
I was going to say right after because on the show, she was on that dating show with her then boyfriend and they had rigged it to act like they didn't know each other so they could win the show. Wow, another messy piece.
Yeah, Tammy was messy as fuck.
Tammy needs to actually own her pioneerism.
Yeah.
Because I was like, yo, she'd be on BBW. I mean, you know, definitely speaking up for herself, but I would have been acting like I was Shawnee. Like, I would have been, like, really, like, y'all
would have been, like, New York from Flavor Flav. Like, this is my show.
You're welcome.
Like, y'all are welcome. Because New York actually takes that credit and that crown now.
For sure.
All y'all bitches is my sons. If I was, that would have been me all day. Like, y'all are welcome. Y'all are welcome for this whole shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think the real world in general gets its due for what they did for reality
pioneering reality television.
They absolutely don't. I think we give it to like Survivor, we give it to like older, kind of messier shows, but not to, you know, the real world was the first.
Yeah, unfortunately, current reality gets Flavor of Love takes all the credit. And I know why, because there was so many spinoffs of Flavor of Love. Like,
yeah.
We got so much from it, you know.
But we were all glued to that shit. You couldn't not watch that.
Couldn't.
We had it on DVDs and shit.
It was like cultural. It was a cultural moment.
It was a cultural shift. It was a crazy, like, even VH1 was surprised and immediately was like, we got to do more with this. But but this is a whole other conversation. But the other thing about Flavor of Love is that Flavor of Love came just as the last of the bulk of Black sitcoms were leaving television because of the writer's strike.
Yeah.
And then because of the merger of UPN and the WB. Both of those things happened like immediately after Flavor of Love premiere, which is why we went through a whole like decade where most of the Black stuff on TV was reality TV.
Because reality TV is also much cheaper
than
sitcom television. You have to pay actors and stuff, union and all that.
And that's why young men don't know how to act on the internet, because they spent 10 years watching Black people being like, I don't give a fuck, bitch. Watching like sitcoms.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's legit. Yeah.
Yeah, but so I mean, if you get a chance, check it out. It's really well. It's the same producers, you know, Bynum Murray. Yes, so it's very well done. you know what I'm talking about. You have to mention the tragic murder of the godfather of Black music, Clarence Avant's wife, Jackie, Ms. Jackie, with a handle on it, Ms. Jackie Avant, who was killed, and it seems to be an attempted robbery.
81
years old, at home at 2:30 in the morning. Like, that's not the way you expect people of that age to pass away. You know, it's horrible. It's horrific. They got a suspect. They arrested him yesterday. Apparently he had done another attempted robbery somewhere in Hollywood and shot himself in the foot. And the cops kind of put two and two together and figured he was the same guy.
Literally shot himself in the foot.
They had to wheel him out on a stretcher.
Literally shot yourself in the foot.
They had to wheel you on a stretcher. Chained to the stretcher with a fucking handcuff. So it doesn't do anything, obviously, to bring Miss Jackie back or help the family, but at least they caught the person. This is horrible. I mean, just like, how do you shoot an 80-year-old woman? Nigga, like, what are you doing?
And the man apparently had like an assault rifle. Like, an AK. Why are you going up in a home invasion with an AK? What are you doing, my nigga?
This is the most like cowardly. Like, that 81-year-old woman posed absolutely no threat to whatever you were trying to do. And it just, Trav and I were just talking about this. Like, where the fuck is the code? Like, I feel like there used to be a bit of like, you know, not necessarily like no women, no children, blah blah blah. But like,
I know, but that was
steal some shit, steal the shit, and go the fuck home. Like, what are you?
And also, even code aside, there's a difference between you getting popped for robbery, you getting popped for murder. Right. And that used to, even if it wasn't a respect code, like, don't kill them because we don't have to, it was like, don't kill them because there's a difference between robbery and murder, getting popped for robbery. Yeah.
It's just like you, again, look, I'm not a robber or anything, so I don't know how you think, but like, you walk up in, we don't know why he picked this house, but let's just say, we can't discuss that, but let's just say, randomly, he picks his house. Okay, you walk up in his house. Mr. Avon wasn't around. He was another place in the house, but there's a 90-year-old man, there's an 81-year-old black woman. My nigga.
What are you doing?
Like, oh, y'all, I'm tripping. I'm sorry. I'm out. Like, shoot the woman.
Let me get these things over here. Because they would have given it to you.
Miss Jackie might have been like, young man, sit down and have a meal, nigga. Yeah. And what are you doing with your life?
They would have been like, what you need?
Yeah. It's bullshit to them.
I feel like people on the internet were like, why do you know who this is? Like, he's the godfather of this. Like, how could you know, whatever. And it's not even about that. It's just like, these are two elders.
That's what right. I'm saying. What are you doing?
But also, I think the whole do you know who this is partially because he's so well respected. He's so beloved, mm-hmm. but he's also very low, right? And that was the thing. It made it feel like hard to imagine this was targeted. It's because Clarence Avon is a nigga. You don't know who he is unless you know who he is until the documentary came out, right?
Yeah.
And Flash, like, he'd be outside with his little sport coat and his little slacks.
Yeah, and you always be like, and you'd be like, people would be like, who's that man talking to Quincy
Who's
Jones?
That very unassuming?
Yeah.
Very, like, he ain't even like QB out here with all kinds of fucking cash.
You
know what I'm saying? Clarence is
Who's the guy in the Rock Nation?
Why does everybody keep running up to him?
Right.
Like, why is Jay-Z running up to him? Like, who is that man that Beyonce is hugging? What is going on?
Not the dude who walks in the room and you're like, money just walked in the room. No, he's not that dude.
Unless you know.
Yeah, but I mean, but you know how some people walk in the room and they look like.
He's not that dude, right?
Yeah. He's super unassuming. He's super whatever. So it's like, so it was hard to imagine it was targeted unless somebody really knew who he was. But if you really knew who he was, it's like, why the fuck would you target Clarence?
Yeah, it's not, something's not making sense. The other thing about it, and then we'll move on, which maybe we'll find out, maybe we don't want, but I actually looked up, it's called Toluga Park. It's a section of Beverly Hills. And I looked it up just on Zillow. And there's like $40 million homes, $30 million homes, $27 million. So like, my nigga, why did you think that was going to work? Like you're running up in the area where there's like $35 million homes. You don't think the security is going to be crazy? Like, why'd you pick that area, nigga? That's not going to work for you. You're going to get caught. Absolutely. That's like running up in Bel Air or something. My nigga, you're going to get caught. Like, what are you doing?
Well, that makes me think that like this person, if not this person or whoever did it, somebody close to them had been there before, because that community is like, you talk about gated communities.
That's what I'm talking about.
Ultra gated.
Yeah.
Like, you can't even drive through that motherfucker. So
how
do you, I don't know. That whole shit is just.
It's awful. It's awful. And so blessings to Alex Avon, his sister, remember his name, and obviously Mr. Clarence Avon and their family, extended family and friends who are all devastated by this.
Like, I can't, and I'm just like, obviously it'd be a tragedy regardless. It's all, you know, any death by home invasion is a tragedy. What I was thinking about was like, how much bullshit and how many shifty niggas Clarence Avon has had to survive over the years, right?
And honestly, and probably helped in some ways a lot of things.
To have reached your, you know, octogenarian, nanogenarian years, where you're supposed to be chilling in the home that you earned through all your labor, and you know, in your twilight, like relaxing, and that be breached, and you lose your partner that way. Like, I cannot. Yeah, it's almost more tragic about somebody being killed like that when they are, even though they may be closer to leaving this earth, for it to happen that way.
So violently. Violently.
80 and you survived. The last 2 years have been so rife with just tragedy. You get through like COVID and like, all this other bullshit.
Civil rights movement and every goddamn thing. You know what I'm saying? Like,
and then somebody takes you out on this.
Some clown nigga shit. Good luck to that nigga inside. Good luck to that nigga
inside at
LA County lockup, my nigga. Good luck. Good luck.
Somebody is 100% gonna get his ass.
Yeah,
because the other thing about Clarence and Miss Jacqueline was that they were, you know, parents, extended parents to so many people in the hip hop community, like Big John Platt, who's CEO of Young ATV.
It's like John's dad. Literally like John's dad.
And Shaka Zulu, who commanded Chris, like they're very, very close to him. He started, he helped start Jimmy and Terry's career.
Jimmy and Terry.
LA and Faces, you know, he helped them, you know, LA and Faces do the little face deal. He sat Puffy down. Puffy was wilding out. You know what I mean? Like, it's, there's so many people who
that owe him
that man. They're everything, right? Got presidents on the phone. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, Obama
helped orchestrate Jackie Robinson's. Like, if you are our listeners and you have not watched The Black Godfather, please do, because he wasn't just a elder statesman in entertainment. This man, they called him a kingmaker, which was perfect. It's like, and we don't have a lot of those anymore, not true ones. But he was the person who could move pieces around the chessboard, right? Which is why they call him the Godfather. Like, he's not the one who's out there in front. He's the one you go to and talk to, and he puts some things in place.
Yeah, he'll make some calls for you. Because ain't nobody not taking his call.
Right.
On the first ring, my nigga, like, oh.
Clarence that Avon doesn't exist phone. Anymore. That level of respect and...
Oh, Bill Clinton, it's Clarence Avon. I got you. Like,
Yeah.
There's nobody in the game right now that everybody respects on that level. Probably never will be again.
It's awful, man. I wanted to mention another heavy thing, but I wanted to mention this Oakland County in Michigan shooting, the school shooting. Ethan Crumley, 15 years old. That was is it three or four people that have died? I know it's definitely three.
Four.
It's four now, right?
That four and several injured, yes.
Several injured. And interestingly enough, they today decided to charge his parents.
As they should.
With manslaughter, because his parents supplied him the gun. And apparently there were a couple calls from the school before this about Ethan wilding out. I mean, I think Ethan might even have brought a gun to school at one point.
Well, a teacher caught him searching ammunition, ammunition on a device and alerted them. And the mom texted him or said, like, I'm not mad at you.
Yeah, just don't get
be
caught.
Be better at not getting caught.
Yeah.
And also
mom and the father never called the school back when they alerted. They never responded to that.
Also, when the shooting made the news, she texted him, stop. Before they even knew who it was or what was going on.
They knew.
There's a message that just says stop during the shooting. So please, that whole family, get all of them the fuck out of here.
So apparently
you are muted now.
They start charging these parents. Maybe finally we'll get a hand.
We'll turn the page. Yes.
Yeah.
Because clearly law makers don't give a fuck.
Get up.
As long as the NRA is lobbying and spending money, because you know Columbine has been 21 years,
now, at least.
20 or 21. Sandy Hook has been over 10 years. Sandy Hook was when I knew this shit was
a wrap. Like, those was babies. Like,
if little rich white kids got killed and nobody gave a fuck, and not only did fuck, people were claiming it was a conspiracy and
a hoax.
I was like, nah, it's a wrap.
Yeah, Alex Jones about to be in the poorhouse because they about to tear his ass up civilly for spreading that lie of it being a hoax. Yeah. And the parents are apparently on the run right now. They said they can't find them.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, they're so CNN. They can't find the parents. They're running. Wow. I mean, they don't catch them, but they're running. So this is interesting. You know.
Yes. Please add to your charges. Please let's get you paid away forever.
Get your jammed up.
Stay away a couple more days.
Yeah. It's good. Stay till Sunday.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Sorry. I thought I was gonna stop cussing on here. It's not going well.
It's okay.
Why would you do that? Who would do that?
Because I need to stop cursing in general. Because
Inga's upstanding, upstanding citizen.
Upstanding citizen. This ain't
listen. I bake cakes for the church. I can't be
Inga makes nigga pies.
I'm saying I was heavily involved in my church too. There've been times when I acted like I was going to try to cut down on my cousin on here. That shit would last a half an episode.
I try. I just get so passionate about
It sounds good.
Maybe that'll be my resolution.
Yeah, we got to mention verses. We got to mention verses. Last night.
Let me tell you how hard I was in the bed when all this.
You was out. You weren't even responding to the group text. I was like, damn, Inga, out.
Last night's verses was the biggest.
The most chaotic thing.
It was so much. It was the biggest, like, it was plot twist after plot twist. It was the biggest, like, this is going to be a fucking disaster / wait, this is actually really fucking good / actually, this is a fucking mess / wait, this is excellent. Like, chaos, like you said. First of all, they start like 2 hours late.
At least.
And then by song 4, Busy started fighting niggas on stage.
Fighting. Busy Juicy J on stage. But
like
not
round
not,
3.
Now, what's interesting, I'm looking backwards now, I see where that came from. Because Busy, for those who don't know, Busy Bone is extraordinarily chaotic. He always is the most chaotic member of Bone, which is saying a lot, because all of them niggas.
Because all them niggas is nuts, and all
Flesh
them
and Bone like did like a 10-year stretch, and like these niggas is nuts. But Busy also had
for real
all the way, and Busy also had a very religious conversion several years ago, probably 15 to 20 years ago. He became what we talked about earlier. He's a minister. He's like preaching to people on the street and all that, but like he takes it seriously. So he is like looking at 3-6 Mafia like y'all are devil worshippers,
which is stupid.
No, I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying, energy was coming from.
But I'm saying for Busy to have been in this game as long as he has, right? Like we know that when 3-6 started, there was some flirtation with horrorcore or whatever.
Yeah.
That was so long time ago. Nobody associates them or affiliates them with that space at fucking all. Like, and hasn't.
Busy kept saying, you devil worshiping motherfuckers. That's why he was so aggressive. Like, you ugly motherfuckers. That wasn't about their physical looks. It was about him looking at them like, y'all are devils.
Is that the way that we get people to Christ, though? Like, what is he doing?
I'm just telling you what Busy was, because there's a clip up where he posted on the gram before the show. He's like, tonight at the Palladium Theater, we're going to get you 3-6-6 devil worship. Yeah. So Busy and Juicy J scrapped it out on stage. They stopped it, but it was chaotic. By the end of this show, no exaggeration, it had to be 100 people on stage. Maybe more.
You know why? I realized as the show went on. Okay, so this was my experience. I get home from the screening, because you bounced from the screening earlier.
Yeah, this was early, yeah.
I stopped at Melba's, got some food, because whatever. I get home from the screening, and it's like 10:30, 11? Mm-hmm. And I get on Twitter, and I'm like, yo, how deep are they into the joint? Should I even log on? And folks were like, yo, they started 10 minutes ago. I'm like, what are y'all talking about? I finally get on, and all I see is just a mob of niggas. That's all I see.
And they kept coming.
Right? So I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And I was like, wait, they fighting? Are you kidding me? And then, like, right after I log on, the shit cuts to, we'll be right, like, a versus, we'll be right back.
Like, somebody made that when the fight started. and put like, it up. It's so, that's it was so great.
Like, you know, on TV, like when you watch a cartoon or something and something goes crazy and then they parody the like,
yeah.
It was literally that, right?
But you like a maroon banner.
But you can hear
technical difficulties at the top.
Like, we're not doing this bullshit. We not. This is a legendary night. We not fucking this. La la la. La. So I'm like, y'all gotta be kidding me, right? So we come and everybody's like, yo, it's busy. It's busy's fault. It's all busy's fault. So they come back. They get themselves together. They come back. They also try to get everybody off the stage. So comparatively, if you did not watch, there were more people on stage than Dipset and The Lost.
Oh. Not even close.
So I saw a couple of clips this morning and I noticed that there was like caution tape on either side of the DJ booth to keep them out of the middle.
The bone side versus the.
Yeah, they were supposed to kind of keep it split, but that never worked.
Was that before or after the fight happened?
No, that was before, but what would happen if Juicy J would like be performing and he'd be going over to the bone side, Lazy Bone would be walking over to the. To the 3-6 side and if you watch the verses, the stage is getting more crowded.
So it got everybody off crowded. The stage. But what I realized was the thing that made this verses great, and 3-6 excelled with it, but Bone did it too. They brought every if there was a feature on the fucking track,
they put Terrence Howard out.
They had Terrence Howard out.
Yeah, nigga came out and did Hustle and Flow. He rapped.
Lil Wayne, Gangsta Boo,
LeChat, the Chicken LeChat, Head, Project LeChat, Pat.
Which was very important that LaTosha was there from Thuggish.
Very important.
It's a Thuggish Bomb.
And LaTosha, Shatasha. Shatasha was there. Wiz was there.
Young Buck,
Lil Flip was there. Like, everybody was.
I haven't seen Young Buck in the flesh in some years. Wow.
What I realized was the reason there were so many niggas on stage is because there were so many people there. Because all them people came with them.
With people. Yeah, all them people came with people, yeah.
And then you got Steve LaBelle, who I always call Steve, not Rifkin. And I feel bad because I need to ask because he looks like Steve Rifkin, but not.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, because I was like, is that Steve? Oh, that's the other Steve that's not Steve.
Steve LaBelle and Breon are the two motherfuckers that always pop up. It's like, how did they get here?
Yo, and Breon was there. That's the other thing. And Breon was there. In the show, Breon is a versus Easter egg. And the funny thing about Breon popping up is that when Breon is popping up in a black music space now, he always wears that Kangol.
Always. That's his uniform.
I've never seen Breon with that Kangol before in my life.
That's his uniform.
Breon in real life is that pop-up nigga. Like, you will be in a room and be like, why is Breon here? Like, in real life. I cannot tell you the number of times I've been like, why are you here? Like, you have no idea why. Like, why is Breon here? So that's not unusual. It's just funny. But yeah, so I was like, oh, this is why there's so many people, because there's so many guests. But I will say that I do feel like it was unmatched. But once Bone got their shit together, they gave it. And like, just the fact that Bone brought out Lil Jon alone for I Don't Give a Fuck.
Yeah.
God didn't play I Don't Give a Fuck when he did his verses, because I was ready on some shit, made me very happy, because it was the exact kind of chaotic energy that you needed.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was, but you know what? It really signified like going to a rap show, like in Jackson, Mississippi. Like that, exactly that energy. That's exactly that. Like in some hot ass club in fucking Lafayette, Louisiana. Like, and you happen to run up in it and 3-6 happen to be there, or somebody have been, that chaotic energy is exactly what it is. They in Mobile, Alabama, so-and-so.
The thing. You were asking the venue. They were at the Palladium.
Oh, in L.A.?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I swear to God, I was like, this looks like they in the South. Like, are they in I was wondering.
Insane. I know about Sage. Well, I will say, though, I do want to give, though, 3-6 a shout out, because Juicy's crazy. Like, I work the
so is Paul.
Juicy and Paul are both crazy, and Juicy and Paul don't always fuck with each other. I think they're good.
Now, but they've gone stretches when not fucking with each other. They're like Lennon and McCartney. They like like they tie together forever, but they go stretches when not fucking with each other.
They really don't always fuck with each other. But what the thing about Juicy that I appreciate is that Juicy has done this shit for so long. what he's not going to do is get on stage half-ass, because he has a deep appreciation for the fact that he got, like, the state, the Bansa Maker Dance Chapter and Beyond was like a bonus, was like a whole bonus for this nigga. And he knows it, right? Like, he knows it. He's aware of it. And he doesn't take that for granted, which I appreciate. So, like, your man was throwing money from the stage. They had strippers. You know what I'm saying? Like, their whole, he had his shit on. Their playlist was tight as fuck.
Well, Juicy and Paul are phenomenal producers. So I knew they was their playlisting and all that, their sequencing was going to be right, because they're great. They're extremely underrated as producers. Yeah.
Come on, Oscar winners.
Yeah, Oscar winners. Like I said, they it was crazy what Benai said, but like the end of it, like they're doing freestyles. They're like Lazy Bone and I forget who else, like literally beatboxing.
Yeah,
and Little Flip is freestyling.
Black and Little Flip,
yeah.
There with a double cup. I'm like, first of all, we still double cupping in 2021. Is that what we're doing? Really?
Yes. Them niggas.
Now,
yes,
what
yes,
time was the freestyling happening? I just want to get an idea.
12.
Yeah, 12 something. Like, the show was over, but these niggas wasn't getting off the stage. They're like, nah,
we're going. They were like, they were still giving shout outs. They were still talking about shit. Crunchy Black talking about, if you know you ain't got COVID, what do you say? Everybody who know they ain't got COVID, make
COVID
some noise.
Noise. Yeah, they did Crossroads together. They turned the lights out. They did Crossroads together, and they had, you know, it flashed up, you know, Virgil, Kobe, Tupac, Biggie, some other people I'm forgetting about, or Nipsey, some other people on the screen.
Busy did at one point apologize.
No, Busy came back. He came back as niggas do. We fought. We fought, nigga. But Busy came back. He got his senses back. And
he went
was like,
took a break.
Took a break. He left the stage. Because I don't know if you saw, Busy almost fought a nigga in the audience.
Oh, wow.
He was rapping, and a nigga in the audience said something, and he was about to jump in the crowd, and Lazy grabbed him.
Right.
Lazy grabbed him and dragged him off the stage. Like, no, nigga, like, don't do that.
Because Busy left the stage a couple times.
Yeah, Busy, yeah, but yeah. So he come
Busy
back.
He left the stage a couple times, but when he
came back, he waved Juicy over.
Yep, he hugged him.
It's happening on stage. He waves Juicy over. They come to, like, the middle where that tape was. They come to the middle. Busy sticks his hand out, and, you know, they exchange words, but basically, like, I'm sorry, nigga, I was tripping, blah, blah, blah. And Juicy, as a grown-ass man, is like, nah, nigga, it's all love. Right. We was tripping. They hugged it out a couple times. Give each other pounds, and then Busy gets on the mic. He's like, "I want to apologize to everybody on both sides.
Yep,
I don't want to fuck this thing up. I was tripping. I'm sorry. Let's get this going." They had more problems. For the rest of the night, you could see the two crews coming together, like motherfuckers hugging on the chat. Gangsta Bruce talking to this, hugging on Lazy Bone. Even the security niggas hugged at the end. Like, it was so Southern Black.
Security had to be stressed the fuck out. Because this was not supposed to be that, right? Like, you're not supposed to be worried about these niggas acting up on a live stream. But
you know what? And a lot of the security niggas know each other. So it's like, nigga, I don't really want to fight this nigga. Like, he's my friend.
You get your man.
Yeah.
I want to give a shout out to Lazy. Because Lazy really had to be a diplomat.
He really was.
He had to be the MC, the wrangler, the diplomat, Lazy had to run the entire Bone side of the show. Which was chaotic. Do the transitions into the songs. He had to really hold down the entire Bone side of the show, but he did it. Lazy
did.
Kept the shit moving. And there was even a moment where Busy was taking one of his breaks, and Lazy's like, Busy, bring your ass back on the set. You know, like, that's how you. Like, I cannot imagine I have to imagine that's who he is on the road. That should happen.
Yeah. When Khalifa came out, like, it was just so much going on. Like, it was so much happening.
Wayne showed up, I was like, Wayne's awake. They got Wayne. But when I saw Terrence Howard, I was like, oh.
Well, that is wild.
Like, these niggas
and that nigga was rapping. That nigga did the whole song.
Yeah, as soon as they brought Gangsta Boo out, I was like, these niggas. And you know, I don't even do winners and losers, but I was like, these niggas won. Because
3-6 won if you want to pick a winner. But it was.
Pat in the house, I was like, they ultra won. Because Chickenhead, I got my whole life, especially because they had LeChat. They did the whole shit.
LeChat came out there. It was great.
Wow.
I enjoyed it. It was
incredible.
It was. It was chaotic as fuck. I enjoyed it. Incredible. Yeah.
So I have a question for y'all.
Yeah.
So you know I'll be on TikTok, right? And so right now BTS just started their tour in the United mm-hmm. States. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are doing like the live stream of the BTS tour. And the show mm-hmm. looks amazing. Like I bet would it go. Does.
Yeah, I would go. I like
BTS. Their music. It's mm-hmm. they be rocking. But I could never go because I cannot handle that kind of sustained screaming yes. from every woman in the area, 40 right. down to like 6 years old. So I have a question for y'all, which is like, what is the thing that you can't get into or don't really like or maybe can't enjoy because of the fan base? Is there a thing besides like Insecure? Because we know we can't watch that and do Twitter at the same time.
That's almost, a good question.
Honestly, almost any of the kind of big pop crossover artists, like, it's really hard for me. Well, I will say with B, one of the reasons it's hard for me to get into B's, not hard, but I used to be a huge Beyonce fan, like before a Beehive existed. You know, from the moment she went solo, I was okay with Destiny's Child, but from the moment she went solo, I was a hardcore Beyonce fan. Once I started working at her label, I had a great respect for her work ethic. Her music was triggering. So and once I worked one of her projects, I literally just like couldn't listen to her for a while. Just because again, it's triggering. It's just like, it's stressful.
That's fair.
Whatever. Yeah. But I also don't want to, nor do I want to talk about it, nor do I want to do anything. Like, I actually kind of hate talking about the new artist period in public because these kids don't know how to talk about music. And it makes it not fun to have a music discussion because it's all...
You can't be objective.
Yeah, that's...
Because you fear for your life at this point.
Yeah, so that's the Brandy's and the Monica's and the Beyonce's and the Reese, but that's also like Ari and fucking Jasmine. Like, I gave, perfect example, I gave RCA a shout out at the Soul Train because I said that RCA is dominating the R&B
space. Yeah, they are. They've been for years because they
already had Ush and Miguel and Ro James and Alicia Keys and Chris Brown, but they also have Normani and they have Lucky Day. And they have the chick Mars, who debuted on the Soul Train Awards. Okay. And they have Tone Stiff. And they have And they have Tim's. And they have Khalid. And they have, you know what I'm saying? So it's like mm-hmm. they have her. And I got like these random fan accounts who were like, fuck them for what they did to Sinashe. And they leaving all the best talent on the bench and Normani's stagnant. They ain't not even pushing it. Why they not pushing Jasmine's album harder and they're not doing anything with her? Hers just got 8 Grammy Award nominations. What are you talking about? It's annoying. You know what I mean? So it just, yeah. I can't enjoy music conversations, honestly, just to talk about if it's not all good and glowing, somebody's coming for you. And even if it is, somebody's still coming for you. It's not fun anymore.
I think for me, it's probably Kanye at this point. Not just because of the antics, but because like his fans are now on some almost Trumpish, almost MAGA-ish. Like he just cannot do wrong. Even when he's blatantly doing and saying fucked up shit, there's always a bunch of fans that'll back up what he says and does regardless. And that irks me. And that definitely bleeds into the music. So that definitely, you know, fucks up my opinion of some of his music. Cause I'm just like,
but you can also tell like he's doing stuff in a vacuum. And now
with a lot of yes men around him.
And now Inca, that's where I am with Dave Chappelle.
Fair.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And
that's very fair. Yeah.
That enjoys to be part of public discourse, but the idea of actual critical conversation, right? People don't understand the difference between criticism and like insult. They're not the same. Right. And it's like, you cannot have like a nuanced conversation about anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I think that the TikTok kids are trying to kind of pull that back, though. So there is culture there that's kind of wacky and, you know, this person can do no wrong. But the people over there, those motherfuckers do not care about your feelings. They tell the truth in their little 3-minute videos and I appreciate it. But I would totally go to the BTS concert. But
yeah, BTS is dope. Couple of things. Actually, one of the things was going to be a TikTok thing. I just wanted to mention. I just find it, I guess, fascinating that You Can't Stop the Rain by Loose Ends is like a TikTok-y kind
of
song.
Because of it's because of the Book of Canaan. What's the power?
Oh, Book of Canaan.
I wasn't sure what that was about either. But
yeah, I was like, why? I think, and they're like people
used an episode apparently.
Because
first of all, Loose Ends, by the way, we do not give Loose Ends enough.
That's why I was like, how do these kids even know about
Soul to Soul gets their love for Back to Life, but like Loose Ends, first of all, You Can't Stop the Rain. I be playing You Can't Stop the Rain today, like it's normal.
It's a great record. It's a great
when
record.
When I saw other people rocking it, I was like, where did this come from?
Exactly. I was like, what? Because
the last time it was even anything was when Shaq sampled it. That's been 20 years.
It's ages ago. Biggie, yeah.
Yeah, for You Can't Stop the Rain. Mm-hmm. But it's like, that was Shaq, right? Not Kobe. Yeah, it was Shaq.
It was Shaq. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, so I was like, same thing. I was like, where did it come from? And then it was from Powerball.
Oh, okay. And another
I feel
thing
like the TikTok kids are the ones breaking the music into the charts right now.
Oh, like, they absolutely are. They absolutely are. It's not a question. Also, just wanted to mention, as we do pretty much every week, Wonder Years, another great episode.
They don't fucking miss.
They don't miss at all. Like, and the angles they take at this episode briefly was about the oldest brother, who I think I mentioned when the show first came on. He's mm-hmm. in Vietnam. So he comes home. And, you know, the easy angle would have been to take, which has been, does he have a drug habit? You know, or is he, mm-hmm. or maybe he has PTSD and he's having the night sweats and scaring everybody in the house. Mm-hmm. But it was none of that. He came home. He definitely alluded to, you guys have no idea what I've seen over there. Mm-hmm. But he came home and they had to accept, the parents had to accept that he was a man now. He's like, he had grown up and even though he was 20 years old.
He also came home to, where are they, Alabama?
At Montgomery, Alabama.
He came home to Alabama at the end of the '60s as a black man.
At 68, yeah.
Which is also an angle that I don't think we get to see. It's very interesting because the original Wonder Years, in the very first episode, Winnie Cooper's brother gets killed in Vietnam. No spoilers, but whatever, it's the Wonder Years. At the end of the episode, he re-enlists to the surprise of his family because he's like, I'm going to be a sergeant there. Like, nobody gives a damn about me here. Like, they're trying to make me a janitor. Yeah. And Kevin says something like, I keep calling him Dean. Mm-hmm. Adult Dean is like, it didn't dawn on me until later that we all got him gifts that he has to use at home. Because we all knew that he was going to be coming back one day. I think they're setting that up for, like, his brother is going to die at some point.
I hope not, because his brother states that he kind of wants to now become a career military person. And I'm hoping it goes that way, that he comes, you know, he becomes
God,
a career military.
So
I don't want him to die.
Because, like, also, even the brothers, you know, is in a 20-minute episode. This is the first time we meet him. Mm-hmm. But what a great character.
Just
so nuanced.
We got to know him in that little bit.
So
of
good.
Time. Yeah,
it was so fucking good.
It was great. And how, like I said, the whole thing where, like, he meets another former soldier and he's like, mm-hmm. yeah, they're hiring down at the bank. And so the soldier gives him a number. He said, tell him that, you know, Michael sent you or whatever. And so mm-hmm. he goes down there thinking he's going to get a bank teller job. But we've forgotten, it's Montgomery, 1968. Mm-hmm. They're not going to put a black man at a teller window to take white people money.
Right.
So he offers him a janitor's job. And the twist is, he says no.
Right.
He's like, nah, I'm out. I ain't taking no fucking janitor's job. And the people are kind of like,
yeah,
why not? They're like, we're offering you a job. He's like, nah, because I'm better than that. You know, it's just really well done.
The thing that struck me of it, or in the episode when they're covering Vietnam, is that Vietnam literally changed the way that they deploy you for the military. So when the draft happened, they were taking these kids and sending them directly to Vietnam, and you didn't come home until your enlistment was over. It wasn't that you would go for 9 months or, like, you know, like we go now, you go 9 months, you go 6 months, you might go a year, but that's the max.
And yeah.
He left one day and they didn't see him for 2 years.
That's right.
his entire enlistment. So, like, if no wonder they were coming home fucked up. Like, can you imagine just being in that constant war for 2 years?
In chaos.
That's why they had to change it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was just, again, it's just, I just love the angles that they take with things. Like, there are problems and stuff, or things that people have to, a lot of us have to deal with at a certain point, but they just take a different angle. They never take the lazy angle. It's always a spin
it's
on
so
it. Like,
smart.
Like the grandfather joint. Like, it's always a spin. Like, oh, I didn't think of it that way. Like, it's always a twist. It's just really well done. I really
now
love
you
it.
Need to watch this show.
Yeah, it's great.
I'm gonna pay you over the holiday.
It's great. Okay. It's great.
It's so good.
So we're going to tap out there. Sean had to bounce. He had a bunch of work stuff he had to deal with. He apologized.
Oh, I also just want to give a shout out to the latest season of Married at First Sight, which was also chaotic for absolutely no reason. These motherfuckers were all over the place just for the sake of
it. It's a mess.
I feel like the experts just need to take a step back.
I feel like everybody and just breather in this regroup.
Yeah, because y'all not matching well anymore.
and the shit that's slipping through the cracks feels more and more excessive. So yeah, it's not been good.
Oh wow. Okay. I got a question for you before we go, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
What did you eat for Thanksgiving?
What I said.
Also had an announcement.
Rice, collard greens. They had turkey, but I I didn't take the turkey, of course. And yams. I said I was gonna eat. That's all I had. Those are my options.
But Jeff realized he needs more protein.
Yeah, I'm doing fish now because I actually looked it up, like what people on vegan diet they do for protein. They suggest you eat like fucking tons of beans, which I'm not trying to do. And they also talked about how, and I've experienced this, how like you'd be feeling tired because you're not getting protein. So people talked about, yeah, I'd be like tired all the time. Like I'm not like, so they said, you know, this being a hardcore vegan is extreme. So if you want to start adding fish to your diet every once in a while, just for that boost, you can do that. So I started to do that, but I didn't do that on Thanksgiving. So I bought a whole pan of fried whiting. Penny had got a whole, I mean, I told you got the jerk salmon. I didn't have any of that. And we ate at 8:15.
God.
8:15. But that's kind of like.
We ate it exactly 4:00. Exactly.
Nigga. But whatever, we had a good time. We had a good time anyway.
Great
to see the family. And hopefully Christmas will eat a little earlier.
Word. On that note, one more thing.
Okay.
Shout out to, I want to say the guy's name is Jamal and Miss Wanda. So remember when the grandmother accidentally texted the wrong grandkid to invite?
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
And so now this is like year six.
Six years, yep.
Well, by the way, you don't never see her real grandchild, just Jamal.
I saw a picture of the real grandchild.
So I was like, yeah. I was like, she probably be telling him, it's okay, baby, you ain't got to come because Jamal.
He look a little saucy. He look a little saucy, you know?
But we did, so we lost the granddad to COVID.
Yeah, Lonnie.
Mr. Lonnie, so rest in peace, Mr. Lonnie. But Netflix has optioned a movie. They greenlit a movie about that. So. Shout out to them. That's such a great story.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Netflix is the option and everything, as they should. Like, why not? Y'all niggas is playing around.
Printing money, like always.
Yeah. But by the way, you know, the CEO of Netflix is Clarence Avant's son-in-law.
Of course he is.
Yeah.
So anyway, on that note, we're going to wrap it up. Stay warm. Stay safe.
It's winter time for real. Yeah. But also what I will say, I'm not going to say that summer is tomorrow, but Christmas time is here.
Round the corner.
Christmas is Christmas time.
Round the corner.
For bringing that, which is one of my favorite Def Comedy Jam skits. He mentioned
it's
that.
It's Christmas time.
I already started watching my Christmas movies. I watched two.
Oh, I've been on it.
Y'all should
November 1st.
Mom's on that shit too right now.
Yeah, I'm watching them. There's a lot of black ones this year, which I'm like, what I'm happy about. It's a lot of black cast.
HBO
ones.
Max got all the
HBO Max. VH1 got some shit coming out.
And lastly, because I'm supposed to be getting ready to go to a screening, but I don't know if I'm gonna make it because I have work to do.
Oh, the Ralph shit? Yeah.
Yeah, the documentary Nas directed and produced with under mass appeal of The Box, which is a famous video show, and Ralph McDaniels debuts today.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to go to a screen. I got invited too, but honestly, I'm still not really comfortable with the movie theater thing. And like you said, it's coming on, it's on TV anyway, so I don't need to go. You know what I'm saying?
I know. Yeah, I got Omicron down in the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm going to chill. All right, y'all. We'll see y'all next week.
Later. Bye.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.